Facebook, LinkedIn, that's not reality. It's not. It's a perception of reality.
That is super scary because how do you be if you don't know who you are? I don't know who really I am. I'm scared of what other people think. There's so many things that I'm afraid of. What the hell am I doing? It was a point of realization. I knew something wasn't working.
If you phrase it like that, that's actually what most people need. That realization.
There are multiple influences on everyone's life.
Correct.
There's your genetic makeup, which influences your personality. There's your unique experiences as you grow up that influence the way that you see the world in partnership with your personality. So they're happening at the same time, influencing each other. Then there's your parents, then it's your siblings and your friends. You're all kind of like in this multidimensional influence that's shaping how you see the world. If you're feeling a little bit lost about who you are and where you want to go and what you want to do, start noticing what draws you forward meaningfully and keep following that.
Question that came into my mind right now, out of curiosity. When's the last time you cried? What would you say to somebody that's in that same position right now that doesn't know if they should take the leap of faith?
Good question.
Welcome, everybody. This is Joel Benishra again, your host on the Discover You podcast. Today, I'm joined with a very special guest, a good friend of mine, a guy that I really value what he has to say about life and his perception of life. So today, we're going to dig deep. We're going to try and understand him. I've got with me Micah. How Hey. You doing, Micah?
Good, Joel. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
Yeah.
You nervous?
Look, I always get nervous for these things, for talks and presentations, but I feel like that's, you know, part of the experience. And so if you, I try and tell myself, oh, this is excitement. And I am actually excited to talk to you and share thoughts and ideas.
What were you thinking when I reached out to you for a potential podcast?
You know what? Curious. Yeah. I've actually, this is my second podcast. I'm always interested in talking to people.
Yeah.
And so I've always liked the idea of doing podcasts. And I know we've had a few conversations before and they've been interesting because you have different ways of thinking about things. Mm-hmm. Everyone does, I guess. And so it's been interesting to like compare the way that you see life. And I've also heard about how, you know, there are like you're running this podcast and you have your own activities with counseling and helping people deal with life's challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And broadly, I find that interesting. So it's good. I'm interested to see what we talk about today. And
yeah,
so I'm really open.
I know people on the screen are looking at like, okay, who's Micah? Mm. And I can't answer that question, so I want you to answer that question. So who do you say Micah is?
Good question. Who am I? Well, still figuring that out, but I'll tell you where I've been and I suppose a little bit of my snapshot. So I'm 36 now. I was originally an engineer for SLAM, I suppose. I still do some little bit of contract work and advising. However, over the last 6 years, I've transitioned away from engineering into psychology. So I'm currently finishing off a master's in clinical psychology. So right now I am a provisional psychologist, which means I'm still doing my training, my placements, my university studies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bit about my education. I'm the second eldest in a large family of 10 kids.
Yeah, right.
So 8 younger brothers, 1 older sister.
Mm-hmm.
And that was obviously a unique and interesting way to start life, being part of a big family and also growing up in the rural area. And I suppose, I mean, there's where do we go from here? There's plenty of...
How would you describe yourself?
I'm curious.
If someone says, Micah is...
Sure.
Is what?
Yeah. I suppose open. He would probably describe me as open and curious. However, at the same time, maybe a little bit detached.
Right? What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So I suppose I've been described as having kind of a stoic exterior.
You're a monk.
A monk. I'm not easily excited. And so that comes across in my personality. Yeah. But generally speaking, I suppose I know I'm pretty open when I'm talking to people.
Yeah.
I don't have a fixed way of viewing the world. I feel like I'm constantly learning, constantly understanding myself and everyone in the world and the world. I value the pursuit of wisdom.
Yeah.
I think that's super important for anyone, but more broadly speaking, like our society.
Yeah.
So I value wisdom. I enjoy my own time. I am curious. Yeah, it's interesting. It's hard to describe yourself from your own perspective other than what you're interested in. And well, I mean, I'm describing all the good things. Maybe there's a whole bunch of things that people are like, oh, you know, this bloke, would you say
it's very difficult for us to know who we are unless other people tell us who we are?
No, I would say you do have a good sense of who you are, but that takes time and it takes experience and working out different activities and doing different jobs. And
if you lay it like that, then what it feels like you're getting attached to these activities and jobs and then describing those activities and jobs as who you are. For example, someone might say, okay, I'm a mother.
Exactly, I'm an engineer. A role, right?
It's a role, right? Yeah. Is that really who you are?
No, that's not. I mean, that's part of who you are.
That's what you do. Mm. Or is it really who you are?
It's part of who you are.
Okay.
Yeah, because you find, like I find meaning in psychology.
Yeah.
I'm interested in it for personal perspective and I find meaning with talking to other people, encountering life's challenges and trying to unmap it or map it out to make sense of it to reduce suffering. That's all meaningful for me.
Reduce suffering? What suffering are you trying to reduce?
Well, that's the whole tenet of like counseling. You would experience this yourself in your work. Well,
when you say suffering, what I'm hearing is Buddha.
Yeah, go on.
That's what I'm hearing from that. When you're saying suffering, I'm saying, okay, have you been researching or listening to on Eastern knowledge on Buddha that has to do with letting go of suffering? Is that where you're getting suffering? Like, I feel like when people usually talk about life, suffering isn't a topic to the general public. It's only the topic to those who go seeking for why life is the way it is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Kind of. I suppose for me, like, suffering's really interesting because everyone suffers. You don't get through life without suffering, whether it's disappointment, whether it's tragedy, whether it's anxiety, depression, missing out on a job, not getting what you thought you wanted. There's grief. There's always suffering, getting sick. There's always suffering. However, there's meaningful ways to unpack that so that the internal distress about that suffering is reduced. So, for example, I mean, I really love that book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, who describes, he was a psychiatrist and he went to Auschwitz in World War II and in the concentration camps for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And he survived and got out and he wrote about his experiences and he called the book Man's Search for Meaning. But he described how despite suffering, you think about the kind of suffering people might endure in concentration camps, so loss of liberty, you know, freedom, no food or very little food, water, luxury, living in squalor, abused, reduced to a number, a lot of distress, a lot of suffering. However, even in that pure suffering, that absence of all pleasure, men and women found meaning. And in that meaning, they found joy. So despite having all of those challenges and all of those external suffering placed upon them, they were still able to find meaning and reduce the subjective feeling of just suffering by finding meaning.
So when we're talking about suffering, what's the definition of suffering? What does it mean suffer? Because I know early on you said it hit me when you said something about I forgot how you worded it, but it had to do with pleasure. You said the absence of pleasure.
Yeah,
I don't know. Is that your definition of suffering?
No. So it's interesting you brought that up because there's many ways to understand, let's say, you know, when someone's well-being.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring well-being into it is because, let's say, someone who is not suffering is experiencing a good or high sense of well-being.
Yeah.
Now, we know, so there's the absence of suffering, and then there's, if you keep going along that spectrum, there's joy, happiness, meaning, pleasure, all of those things that are on the opposite end of suffering. And so,
hold on, that scale just got me thinking. Are you saying if joy is on the opposite side of suffering, does it mean that would contradict what you're saying before about the book, right? Wouldn't it? Because you can have joy in suffering.
Yes.
So it can't be on the opposite side of the spectrum.
Well, there's external. So the way I'd unmap that is that there's like subjective and objective suffering.
Yeah.
Objective suffering is you're in a concentration camp.
Yeah.
Subjective suffering is how you internally experience that external suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have very little internal suffering because you're at peace with where you are. Mm-hmm. You have found meaning within life in the concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
You get enjoyment out of your role despite all of the hardships.
Mm.
And so that's where that little spark of joy might, despite everyone thinking, how could you be? Like, how did you survive?
Yeah.
Let alone actually find little sparks of joy.
Yeah.
So when I say it's on the opposite, when I explain, or I'm kind of riffing a little bit, that joy is on the opposite end of suffering, I'm talking about internal suffering.
Or maybe the word we should be using is happiness, being on the opposite of suffering.
Yeah, because you could put joy, happiness, meaning.
I feel like joy and happiness are two different things.
Okay, how do you see?
So
they probably are.
I see happiness is a state that you're experiencing because of external factors, right? There's external factors that are contributing, that are creating a feeling within from some what's happening on the external. Mm. Whereas, so the best way to probably lay it out is joy is coming from within, and happiness is coming from without.
I can see how you can map that out.
So usually when we use the word happiness, it's to do with some environmental factors, something that's happening around you.
Mm.
And it's creating happiness in you. But if you even use the analogy you used about the concentration camp, nothing's happening on the outside, but it's all coming from within. Mm. That's that joy, right? It's that spark that's coming from within.
It may be that lack of easy happiness, that joy might be related to the complexity of life. Like, we live complicated lives. Technology is supposed to – a strength of technology that's often touted is it makes our life easier.
Yeah.
It also makes our life a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
You think about social media and maybe emails and text messages and the amount of technological understanding you have to have to – sort of be part of the community.
Yeah.
At the same time, you're very distant from everybody. You probably live, you're less likely to live in a large community. You live more individual lives, you know, talking about Western versus.
Well, I struggled here. When I came here, I was used to all the kids in the street always talk, always outside, nobody inside.
Yeah.
So I came here and I remember my first week, I was like, I went outside. Where's all the kids?
How old were you when you came
in? I was probably, 12, 13?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's all the kids?
Mm.
And I realized everybody's inside playing Xbox.
Mm.
And I was like, what's going on? Like, you coming out? No, I'm playing PS4. PS2 back then. I'm playing PS2. And it was a bit sad that I wanted to connect with people physically, but people wanted to connect with me online through a game, and there's nothing wrong with games. But the more I think about it is that when people are missing so much connection, like the average person doesn't know their neighbors, doesn't know who's living on the right or left of their house.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm. Yeah. So it's that loss of connection. That's, I think, a big factor.
But they're probably friends on Facebook.
Yeah. Got more connections in the digital world.
LinkedIn. Yeah. But Facebook, LinkedIn, that's not reality. It's not. It's a perception of reality. but it's not true reality. And that's, I think that's why a lot of people are suffering, especially in the area of like physical health and is because they are looking at other people's socials and thinking that that's actually what's going on.
Sure.
But that's not really what's going on. Like if you live with somebody that's posting all these beautiful, wonderful pictures online and you actually go live with them, you might realize, hold on, this is actually hell. Mm. I actually don't want to live a life like this. Mm. But it doesn't seem that way when you're looking at it from a social point of view. Mm.
Definitely, definitely. Like there's that disconnect between reality, your lived life, and what you tell the world or what other people tell the world.
What do you tell the world?
Not much, to be honest.
You don't? You don't share much?
No, I mean, suppose this is an avenue and, you know, I interact with my colleagues, I interact with my family, I interact with the people that I'm doing clinical work with. So that's my, let's say, node of communication with the world, but I'm not a big social media person. And that's probably an area of reluctance for me because related to my personality.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily like being the center of attention. But I do like talking, right? And so this is like a interesting
conflict or what?
Yes, it's an interesting area, you know, to get on here and do something that I really enjoy, which is talking about interesting subjects.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a slight tension about, oh, I wonder what people are thinking. I wonder what you're thinking, you know.
Yeah.
So, and that's a very common challenge for most people.
Yeah.
You know, this fear, I suppose, of what other people think
of them.
Mm. And I mean, we need a little bit of it. A little bit is healthy.
Yeah.
Because it stops us, it makes us be civil. But too much can be too anxiety provoking. It might.
How do you deal with what other people think of you?
Yeah, very good question. I suppose, you know, I challenge myself. So, for example, a few years ago, I sort of recognized that, hey, there's many things I was afraid of. One of them being the center of attention.
Oh, talking, you're afraid of that?
Yeah, afraid of it.
Yeah, right.
Talking in public. You know, it was very anxiety provoking. And so I wrote down all the list of my fears.
Mm-hmm.
And I had realized that, well, the only way I'm going to, let's say, integrate these fears so they become useful for me and become less restrictive, but I learn from them, is I've got to face them and I've got to do them. So one of the things I did was I did Toastmasters, which is a public speaking club. So you get together. Actually, I did it in Adelaide.
No, no.
Get together every fortnight and you deliver prepared speeches and also impromptu speeches. So someone might say, you know, you've got no idea what question you're coming. Like, okay, Joel, I'd like you to get up the front now and talk to us for 2 minutes about how the earth is actually flat. And you might completely disagree with it, or have no idea what the hell you're going to talk about, but you'll get up and talk about it or that question, answering that question for 2 minutes. It helps to reduce that fear of what people might think.
Yeah.
And it's good practice at thinking on the spot and getting the dialogue.
If that's one of your fear, what's run through your mind when in terms of what people might think? What's the worst case scenario? Like, are you thinking that people might disown you, might not like you? What's the worst case scenario?
Yeah, it's difficult to nail down as to what is the ultimate fear.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but speaking very personally now,
yeah.
For me, I think, for a long time growing up, I didn't actually know who I was.
Mm.
And, you know, I had a role to play. I was a second eldest, so a lot of responsibility was put upon me. I was a peacemaker, let's say. Mm. I was the mediator. I liked to avoid conflict, make everyone get along. But that meant that I often was appeasing other people rather than figuring out what I liked, what I wanted.
Yeah.
And so when I became the center of attention, can you imagine this?
Mm-hmm.
When someone becomes the center of attention who doesn't truly know who they are.
Yeah.
That is super scary because how do you be in front of people with the spotlight on you when you can't like fade away into the background? How do you be if you don't know who you are? And it might sound foreign for someone who's grown up, who's maybe a bit more extroverted, who has had different opportunities to express themselves. Certainly for me for a long time, it was a challenge to actually, it took me a while to actually acknowledge, hang on a second, what do I like? What do I want to do with my life? Who am I? Who do I want to be? What do I believe? And how do I unpack all of that? And so, so that's the core, let's say, fear. Mm-hmm. Now, over time, I've managed to answer a lot of those questions. Of course, I will continually answer those questions as I go through life.
How was your childhood? Was it a happy childhood?
Yeah, it was, you know, I remember my childhood being pretty fun until I hit my teenage years.
Nick.
Yeah.
What happened there?
I think as a kid, you just, you know, there's so little worries, right?
You weren't the black sheep of the family. You never felt like you were left out.
No.
Because we're having 10 kids. Obviously, sure. All sorts of dynamics will build among the brothers and the whatever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's always complications. There's always like conflict here and there. But overall, like, I mean, we grew up on 50 acres, homeschooled to year 8. So, you know, that kind of like lower age time where it's just a lot of fun. You're growing up, learning how to drive cars and ride motorbikes and bikes and the tractor. And so a lot of that was pretty fun. I did have the sense that I was an emotional child. And that's...
What do you mean by the emotional child?
So I mean, that's probably why I'm in the field I am now, psychology, is that I'm quite empathetic. So I did get that sense that I was, you know, maybe more emotional than most of my siblings.
Yeah.
But the challenge, it really didn't get challenging until my teenage years when it took me a while. I didn't find it easy to find out who I, to really settle to who I was, who I am. And so that happened for me later in life. You know, I'd say my early 20s, it was a constant learning journey. And it really only clicked for me when I was 29.
Really? Some people would say that's pretty late.
That's very late.
Well, late to what though?
Yeah. Let's flip that around. It's probably later than general. Let's say most people have a good sense of who they are by the time that they're, I mean, I'm guessing here, I haven't read much of the research on this, but maybe by the time they're 20, early 20s, they're kind of figuring out what career they want, you know, what kind of
when we're talking what they about, value. When we're talking about finding out who you are, are we talking about finding out what career you deserve to go to?
I'm talking.
That's not what I'm talking about.
No, sure. No, that's not what I'm talking about. Okay, although good. I did use that as part of the example because it is part of finding out who you are. Because
correct.
Who you are is related to what you find meaningful in life. And if you are unsure what you find meaningful, then that partly informs that you might not fully understand who you are.
And the only reason I question that is because I do tons of counseling like a large percentage of people are miserable in what they do. And so I feel like the system just produced these robots that came through and got told they got to get something that is a full-time job.
Yeah.
And so nobody took the time to actually understand themselves and they were just throwing in the work field. And then if you're not careful, time flies and then you end up having, 10, 20, 30 years in the field. And then you look back on your life and you can't you can't tell what happened. 30 years is gone and there's nothing you can show for it. So they would look at the last 20, 30 years or so forth, and they would express it as, I did something miserable, but it wasn't for me. It was for the kids. Mm. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that statement there that look at what I did or I'm doing for you or for my kids, it's problematic, like as you noted, because no doubt it's partly true that they are doing a lot and that it is helpful and important and meaningful. However, to place that burden on the other person, on the child, that's problematic, I think. It's unhelpful because the child didn't ask to be born and to they didn't say, hey, be my parent for me, please, right?
Yeah.
That's on you,
Nick.
Right, as a parent. You chose that path, you know, to a certain degree, you chose that path. And yes, I'm sure it's hard and challenging, but that shouldn't, burden should not be placed on the child. That's problematic in
estimation. The extent of that burden goes up to parents expecting their kids to be a certain way, right?
Sure.
Well, what's your take on that? And did you have any expectation going up?
100%. And of course, parents always have expectations. That's normal because the child needs to have something to, let's say, aim for.
Mm.
Now, along the way, the child works out, grows up, turns into teenager and then adolescent. And then works out maybe those expectations aren't accurate or best placed.
Mm.
And there's a bit of tension and rebellion perhaps as the adolescent grows up and there's a bit of give and take, no doubt, with a parent.
Yeah.
To be flexible with the expectations. That's definitely can be a source of challenge if those expectations are too fixed.
Yeah. So you said you didn't find yourself until you were probably 29.
Mm.
So I'm guessing there was some expectation that probably were heavy in your shoulders.
Yeah. Definitely like the expectations growing up influenced who I turned out to be. However,
what's an expectation that like burdened you when you were growing up?
Good question. Because I was the second oldest and the first male, the first boy, I had the, let's say, expectation of ultimate responsibility. Now, that might be a bit of perception on my behalf.
Yeah.
However, that was the expectation that I knew. Responsible, do the right thing, lead the rest, because otherwise they're going, you are responsible for the doing well, essentially, doing the right thing. If you don't set the right example, we're all in trouble. So that definitely shaped me. And I want to say something, though, because there's always – it's multi – there are multiple influences on everyone's life.
Correct.
There's your genetic makeup, which influences your personality.
Mm-hmm.
There's your unique experiences as you grow up that are separate to everyone else's unique experiences that influence the way that you see the world.
Yeah.
In partnership with your personality. So they're happening at the same time, influencing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's your parents who have a set, maybe the way that they see you and reflect back to you. Then it's your siblings and your friends that are all, you're all kind of like in this multidimensional influence that's shaping how you see the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I look around at my my siblings and my general sense is that most of my, you know, I'd say that part of my late bloom, let's say, you might call it, for me anyway, my late development is partly my genetic makeup.
my personality. Because if you simplify mm-hmm. my life, influence yeah. down into nature, so the environment
yeah.
and nurture, your genetic makeup, your personality, which is largely fixed. It is shaped somewhat by your experiences, but it's more fixed than your environment.
Mm-hmm.
My environment was largely the same for my siblings.
Correct.
However, they seem to, at least some of them, seem to figure out earlier in their life what they wanted to do, who they wanted to be, who they were. I mean, that's my estimation just mm-hmm. based on, let's say, it's my bias subjective estimation that I was perhaps, in my own subjective opinion, it took me longer to figure that out. And I place that at the feet of my personality and my genetic makeup in partnership to the environment, sure,
mm-hmm.
but it's just the uniqueness of me. Now, there's pros and cons of all of that because it's not necessarily a bad thing that that's how it happened for me.
Yeah.
Because I had to unpack all of these things very slowly and deliberately. What is the meaning of life? What does happiness and joy mean?
Mm-hmm.
What's suffering? It's led me down the career mm-hmm. of psychology. It's meant that I've wandered life a bit more than other people.
Oh, you're a wanderer.
I'm a wanderer. And there's a great quote saying that all who wander are not lost.
Because the perception in life is if you wander a lot, you're lost. Right? That's the perception of all wanderers. When people look at wanderers, they say, what is he doing with his life? He's confused at the moment.
Sure. Yes. But he might be taking the scenic route. And maybe along the path, he or she will find little treasures that they will bring back to the community. And so there's that. There's that to appreciate as well. So I don't have any sort of blame or regret. Or it's just my life. And
you've accepted it fullness.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, let me just throw the big question out there. Like 29, you say you figured yourself out.
Well, no one's ever figured themselves out.
Just at
29, yeah. I realized, hang on a second, I'm in a career I don't really like as an engineer.
Yeah.
I don't know who really I am. I'm scared of what other people think. There's so many things that I'm afraid of. What the hell am I doing? So it was a point of realization. I needed to change. I didn't know what needed to change, but I knew something wasn't working. And so I left my job. I went traveling. Yeah. I ended up in Adelaide. Next minute I'm studying psychology.
If you phrase it like that, that's actually what most people need. That realization.
Sure.
I feel like that realization realization is one thing. Having the guts to not throw away, but to turn your back on everything else and every expectation people have on you and say, hey, I'm going to go on a journey to find out who I am.
Yeah.
That in itself is scary. How did you manage to just drop everything and go?
Great. I was more afraid of who I was than making the change.
Really?
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like the fear of leaving this set of expectations, mm-hmm. my own and others, my safe engineering job.
Yeah.
The fear I had of that person staying stagnant, staying like in distress, subjective distress. Externally, that's what I'm talking about before.
Yeah.
Externally, you looked at my life.
Yeah.
Good job, good money,
100%.
Good family, you know. But I was miserable.
Really?
Absolutely.
Did you get depressed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's been times in my life when I've been depressed for sure.
Yeah.
That is a galvanization for doing something because it allowed me to examine what was in my life, realize, hang on a second, I don't really know who I am. I'm afraid of a lot of things. And
I want to do something about it. And so for me, yes, while it was scary to take the step with changing careers and going on a journey of facing my fears, it was more scary, or it was less scary to do that than to stay who I was.
What would you say to somebody that's in that same position right now that doesn't know if they should take the leap of faith?
I would say that to have courage, and courage is not having no fear. It is being brave despite being scared, still doing it despite being scared, and to know that if you are methodical and you take steps to improve your situation and pursue what is meaningful, not what is flashy and bright, but what is meaningful for you, then you can't go wrong. You have to be honest about what is meaningful. Like, are you making these changes or thinking about these changes because they're a shortcut, or are they actually taking you on your path of more meaning, more fulfillment, more what you want to do, but you're scared about the risks that come along the way?
Yeah, that's what I've said.
So,
you know what? I'm interested. I'm actually, there's a question that came into my mind right now out of curiosity. When's the last time you cried?
Jeez. You're asking the tough questions, my friend. Good question. On the weekend.
Really? Like, do you mind if we diagnose that? Like, what? Like, we go into not too deep, but just.
Sure.
Yeah, what happened there?
Good question. It's interesting because I'm calculating, I'm calculating in my mind how vulnerable I want to be right now.
Yeah.
Just I suppose I won't get into detail, but I was having a conversation with my girlfriend, and we're talking about difficult things, and not really difficult things, but emotional things, let's say. And
like, what's the topic? Just so we can, maybe we might be able to discuss that topic.
The topic was around love, actually.
Really?
Yeah. You know, what does love mean?
Yeah, that's a big topic.
It's a big topic, and I don't have full views on it. I feel like it's an area that I'm still learning, and understanding, and. So it was a vulnerable conversation to answer your original question.
Yeah.
Yeah. What made you ask that question? That's a kind of out of the blue.
It came out in my mind. So you were talking about you knowing from a young age that you're very sympathetic and you're in tune with your emotions and somewhat. And I was like, it'll be interesting to find out when you felt a strong sense of emotion. And that led to tears because, and the funny thing is that you said it came from the conversation you had with your partner, which to me kind of shows that you value your relationship a lot and that it has that level of impact. Like, you've never cried for your job, have you?
You'd be surprised.
You have.
You think about my job, what my job entails.
Well, psychology maybe.
Vulnerable conversations with other people.
Yeah, okay.
And so when there are heavy emotions, that can stimulate an emotional reaction in you. You know, if you've ever had a conversation with somebody and they tell you, they share vulnerably with you, not telling a story, but literally you feel their emotion. You experience what they're feeling through their eyes, essentially, that can be quite heavy.
And for those of us that are in this field of people helping, I've had this little I don't even know how to describe it. This phase where I used to get super emotional with clients and whatever, and then. Especially clients that I continuously coming back, you start to pick up a pattern in what they do and how they think that produces the emotion that creates the event. And at some point, I think my last client that I dealt with, it was a tough one, really, because for him to get out of that state of mind was like, according to me, it was a very small change that he had to do. And he had to do with just making a decision. But for them, he said to me, he said, I don't want to make that decision. I want to stay in this state. And I was trying to like process what's going on. I'm saying, okay, you're miserable here. You want to get out of this state, but you don't want to make the decision to get out of the state. And I sat with that for quite a while. And I'm like, how am I supposed to help a client that needs my help, comes to get help, but don't want to get out of the state? Because I've laid out what's going on in their life, and I've laid out how they can come out. And they've looked at it, and they know it takes one single decision. And yet they themselves don't want to make that decision to get out of that state. They want to stay in the state. And that state of mind has become somewhat comfortable. Right, they've started to identify themselves with that state of mind. And I felt like for a fair bit of what it is, the identity became the state. So every time they'll meet somebody, you know what happened to me? And describe that state. And they were getting validation from that state. So they were benefiting from that state from somewhere. But yet they hated being in that state because of what it did to them. It's a complicated one.
Absolutely. Humans are so complicated. Like what you're describing there, yeah, it's on one hand, they're getting some sort of, it's serving some purpose where it gives them some validation and affirmation perhaps, which is important because often it's a lonely world. And when you receive that, that's a good thing. However, perhaps what, you know, you've highlighted that emotional state overall was not helpful for them, and they could recognize that. But on the other, on one hand, they recognized that, but on the other hand, they liked the peripheral affirmation and validation they were getting from this unhelpful emotional state.
How do you help a client like that? Because you can't change them.
Well, that's right. You can't change anybody.
Yeah.
So I suppose you might ask them what they wanted to prioritize, reducing this emotional burden or emotional state, this negative emotional state, or having the validation and affirmation from other people related to the state. What helped them more? And was there an alternative? So that affirmation, that the good stuff that was happening on the outside of this challenging emotional state, can you get that elsewhere? And maybe to have a conversation about how sometimes it's, for what you've described, it can be addictive to feel that way because you're feeling something. That's better than feeling nothing.
Yeah, right. What are you? You're feeling something, and it's better than feeling nothing.
Yep. This isn't formal kind of work or theories, but it reminds me of the song by Gaudier. He sings in one of his songs. There's a certain addiction. There's a certain kind of addiction that comes with feeling sad.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. You can enjoy your negative emotions too much. And maybe it's because sometimes that means you're feeling something.
And it's better to feel. Well, if the ultimate problem is that people are not feeling loved. Maybe the validation is people are substituting validation for love. So if I don't feel a sense of love in my natural environment, right, maybe the attention that I can get from being a victim can provide me that sense of love, because everybody's talking about me and everybody's hearing my story. Because my story is roaming around.
Yeah.
Maybe what the human mind is trying to do is substitute that for love.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's something, but there are alternative ways of living that are more helpful, where you're finding, well, first of all, whilst affirmation and validation is important and helpful, the question is, why do you need that? Is it because you don't validate yourself enough? Is it because you don't have enough self-love? Perhaps. And if you don't have a good self, sense of self-worth and self-value and self-love, you will seek that from other people, potentially. Not saying this always happens, but that's another.
Well, you're going to seek it from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And so the way that I like to think about it, because I've definitely experienced this myself.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When I was younger, I realized that I wanted to be someone who could withstand any outside opinion or perception.
Yeah.
And be so solid in my own self-understanding of who I was, my own self-value, knowing that I'm a good person and that I do meaningful, good, helpful things for this world, in this world, and for other people. I can be rock solid with that, that it does not matter what anybody else thinks. I don't know if I've gotten there yet, but that's my aim. Now, that's not to take away from that it's important to seek feedback from other people, especially in professional work. You know, you talk to other people more experienced than you. You know, I'm thinking about my supervisors in the clinical psychology pathway. That's important because it takes constant – you can self-reflect, but you're limited by your own views and beliefs and experiences. You can ask someone else, what do you think about me? And as long as it's in a helpful space where it's not abused, it's not some sort of power trip by the other person, that can be very useful for your own development. So I'm not taking that away. I'm just pointing out that there's something to be said for you to be able to stand by yourself with complete humble understanding of who you are. You don't need anyone else's
validation. This is the theory that just came out to my mind. So maybe, and just maybe, what we actually need to be aiming towards is, yes, we're getting validation from the external environment around us, and but the game here is, how do I play, right? I receive feedback from the outside, and yet I don't identify with the feedback, right? I incorporate that as part of my development, and yet I know that that's not who I am. So it's almost the sense when people say, your spirit is always pure, and that's who you are, and everything else is just clothes you're wearing. Like, you're this individual wearing clothes. You love the clothes. You put it on. You wear it. It makes you feel good, look good. But the clothes is not who you are. And so all the feedbacks and everything that I take from external factors adds on to who I am, but it's not who I am.
Sure.
Right? And I know it can come off. I know the comment this person say can come off.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So your analogy around wearing clothes.
Correct.
Yeah. That's cool. That's a good way. That's an interesting way to think about it. And that you can take it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
You don't have to identify with it. So I think that's important. There is that balance because at least you tried it on, right? You didn't leave it on the shelf. You said, okay, give me that shirt.
Yeah.
And you tried it on and you went, you know what? It's not a bad color.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take that knowledge. But actually, it's not exactly the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
You might be like, hey, this is a
perfect
sweet.
Fit. Or maybe it's the right fit for the season. Like you might be, oh, it's cold right now. This jumper is perfect. But if it's super hot, 40 degrees, then that's probably not. And there's nothing wrong with the feedback because you need a jumper at some point in your life. But maybe it's not for the season.
Sure. We're talking about seasons before, weren't we?
Yeah. We were.
A good time to
talk. I'm thinking we might need to come to an end for this podcast. Yep. I think we're reaching the hour mark. And I've got like 5-10 other questions just lining up. We got to do a part two for sure.
Sure.
Yeah. I think we're up for a part two. How do you feel about part two?
Yeah, absolutely.
Done.
I think we're only getting started.
100%. That will be a part three for sure. And I've got so many questions to ask you, especially in terms of the seven areas of human life. I know we intertwinedly talked about different areas of life. We talked about the mental side of things. We talked about the social side of things and a little bit about family. I think we haven't even touched about spirituality. We haven't talked about finance yet. And career is another thing we got to talk about. There's so many more things we can talk about. And so I think the next episode is only going to go up from here.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks everybody that tuned in and thank you for coming in through to the Discover You podcast. I had Micah with me sharing some beautiful advice. And Micah, just before you go, here's the last question for you. If you had to give any advice to somebody that is struggling to discover who they are, because this podcast is all about Discover You and they're trying to reach that state of fulfillment and find the ultimate joy in life, what would you say to them?
I think if you're feeling a little bit lost about who you are and where you want to go and what you want to do, start noticing what draws you forward meaningfully and keep following that.
What do you mean by that?
So we're all curious creatures. We have the capacity to be curious.
Yeah.
And we're noticing things in life all the time. And the things that drew you forward, drew your curiosity forward to lead you down the path that you where you are now, which is you're running a podcast, that touched you in a certain way. That idea, that pathway drew you forward and you were open enough to walk down that path. But the first step for all of that is noticing. And so just noticing what draws you forward meaningfully is the first step to finding out what you want to do with life.
Or would you say what life wants to do with you?
Hell yeah. Let's flip it around. Let's flip the script. It is not what you ask of life, but is what life asks of you.
You believe so?
I think that's got a valid point for sure. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it more in the next episode. But thank you, Margaret. Thank you for coming in. If you enjoy our content, please go through and subscribe to our social media channels at the Discover You podcast. We'll put more links in the description and so forth. And so, subscribe. And Joel Bonisha here. And peace out. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed our content, please follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and TikTok. And if you really want to support us, please support us on Patreon, Subscribestar, and Crypto. I personally want to say thank you to all of you that are following us. And I want to make a promise that if you follow us, if you subscribe to our channel, that we will keep producing the best, highest form of quality content to add value to your life and help you find fulfillment in life. Thank you.